Many of us are of an age that we've always connected cigarette smoking to serious health risks. But there was a time before those warnings. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. It was 50 years ago that the then U.S. Surgeon General released a milestone report on the hazards of cigarettes. This hour, we'll focus on the state of smoking here in Iowa with a number of experts and ask what public policies are most effective. We also want to hear from you if you're a smoker or former smoker, what works and what doesn't when it comes to kicking the habit. Smoking, 50 years after the Surgeon General's report, after this news update. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Many of us are of such an age that we've always connected cigarette smoking to serious health risks. But there was a time before those warnings. 50 years ago, it was in 1964 that the then U.S. Surgeon General released a milestone report on the hazards of cigarettes. And today, although smoking is becoming less popular in many parts of the world, including here in the U.S., the total number of smokers is growing. Global figures reveal. In 2012, nearly a billion people, that's one in seven on the planet, smoked every day. And with the Earth's population having more than doubled in the last 50 years to 7 billion, there are simply more people to take up the habit. This hour, we'll focus on the state of smoking here in Iowa. How many of us, especially young adults, are still lighting up? How effective are the smoking bans and marketing restrictions on tobacco? What about e-cigarettes? And we'll look at a recommendation that at-risk smokers receive annual lung cancer screenings as part of the Affordable Care Act. But let's start off by talking with a hopefully soon-to-be former smoker who is currently using e-cigarettes as a way to stop smoking completely. Brad Gaspolin is with us. He's an Iowa City resident. Hi, Brad.
Hi, Ben. How's it going?
Doing well. Did I characterize that correctly? You're smoking e-cigarettes right now. You're a former smoker of tobacco in the traditional burning sense?
Yeah, even though, you know, after you quit, you occasionally still slip up.
You do. So occasionally you'll go back to a traditional cigarette.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back further. How old were you when you started and why?
I think I was about 15 years old when I started. And I don't know, my friends had cigarettes. I tried one. I didn't really start then, but over time, as I was around people who were smoking more, I just kind of picked it up.
Mm-hmm. Did you realize at one point in time you were hooked?
I think that was a long time afterwards when I actually started trying to quit. I don't think you really realize you're hooked until you try and quit.
Mm-hmm. What was that like, that first time quitting?
Actually, the first time it didn't seem so bad until you start to realize that It's very easy to fall back into it, even after you think, you know, you're past the first couple weeks or so. If you buy one pack of cigarettes because you just want one cigarette, then you have an entire pack of cigarettes burning a hole in your pocket.
You're always thinking about them.
Yep, or you're always thinking of an excuse to have one.
Mm-hmm. How much does it affect you if you're a smoker who's recently stopped smoking and you get out into public, you get a whiff of someone's secondhand smoke? Does that do it to you too?
You know, that's never really been a problem for me. I do have kind of a terrible sense of smell from a childhood accident. Uh-huh. Maybe that has something to do with it. But not really the smell so much, but if you're around a big group of people, everybody wants to go outside and have a cigarette. You know, you don't want to be the only one left out of the group.
So it's a social situation that really is the hardest to resist.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How many times would you say you've tried stopping, Brad?
Oh, probably about five or six times.
Mm-hmm. And can you characterize how you picked up on smoking again? What was your downfall, if you will?
Well, just being it's again a social situation. I was just around friends who were smoking at the time. You know, you start to have them more and more. You start to borrow cigarettes from people. And then eventually you get your own pack, and it's kind of, that's your downfall there.
Mm-hmm. So you've picked up e-cigarettes, and how do you see those? And we'll explore those a little bit more, what they are and how they work differently than conventional cigarettes a little bit later in the program. But how do you see them?
Well, I didn't really start it as a way to quit. It just kind of turned out to be really helpful for that. It gives you a kind of a chance to just have a little bit of nicotine when you need it, rather than lighting up a cigarette and then you're in it for the full cigarette. So I can take a puff off my e-cigarette, a couple puffs, and then be done with it for a while, rather than, you know, going outside and smoking a whole cigarette.
Mm-hmm. And remind us, how do they work?
I don't know the exact details, but I've got a battery, and then I have a little cartridge of nicotine fluid soaked in, I think, some cloth. That's about all I know for how they work.
Mm-hmm. As an alternative, have you tried nicotine patches or nicotine gum as a way to stop?
I have tried nicotine gum, but it didn't really seem to do anything for the cravings. And I wasn't a big fan of the tingling sensation that it gives you if you chew it too much.
Mm. What, Brad, is the chief motivator for you to stop? What's the biggest reason? There must be several. Health, of course, a big reason. Reasons past that?
I think health is probably everybody's main one. Not having to be dependent on something, being able to manage my own stress on my own without a crutch is always a plus, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I ask that also because we've asked a number of people in preparation for this program to talk about their smoking habits, present and past, and many people are reluctant, and it seems like there's a social stigma attached to that. And I'm wondering if you feel that, if you tend to perhaps even hide when you smoke sometimes.
I've never really felt a social pressure to quit. I think a lot of the places that I'm out in public, there are actually still a lot of people smoking. And I don't see, if you're afraid of being seen smoking, I don't know how you get through it, because you have to be outside pretty much everywhere now. So I don't know how you pick up the habit if you're afraid to be seen doing it.
Okay. Iowa City resident Brad Gaspelin, thank you very much for sharing your smoking story. We appreciate it, Brad.
Thank you, Ben. Thanks for having me on the program.
And this is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. We're remembering the landmark U.S. Surgeon General's report linking cigarette smoking and lung cancer, released 50 years ago in 1964. According to the CDC, Center for Disease Control, 18% of Americans still smoke. 440,000 die from tobacco use each year. And to compare that, 18% of Americans who smoke today, 43% of Americans smoked in 1964 when that Surgeon General's report came out. We're examining the state of smoking in the country and in the Midwest, in Iowa today. Let's say hello to Jen Schulte, Iowa Director of Government Relations at the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. Jen Schulte, welcome to our program.
Thanks, Ben.
I mentioned that nearly 1 in 7 of the 7 billion people on this planet smoke every day. What's the picture look like when we zoom in on the U.S. and the Midwest and Iowa?
You know, Iowa for adults come in right under the national average. We're at 18.1% right now. We had a little bit of a decline from 2011 when we were at 20.4. So we are under the national average. As far as youth is concerned, our high school rates are comparative at about 18.1% with other youth across the country.
Mm-hmm. Over time, what has that looked like? Have we been, you said we were up to what, over 20% in 2011?
We were at, for adults, we were at 20.4. It's really hard to have trending data or comparative data from the previous years because of the way the surveillance and methodology of the testing has taken place over time as we move away from landlines and incorporate cell phones into testing. We haven't been able to have that data to compare.
As a region of the U.S., the Midwest, or even as a state, do we know if we're middle of the pack? It sounds like we are when we're right at the pretty much the national average of 18%, huh?
Yeah, I think we're right in the middle. Nebraska is a little bit higher than us in some of our bordering states, but we're all very close to the national average.
Do you happen to know what are the regions in the U.S. that smoke the most? I'm just going to say the South, perhaps, or not.
I actually am unaware of that,
okay.
So I apologize.
Maybe we'll find that out a little bit later. You talked about youth smoking. What are some of the other demographics of the smoking population in terms of male-female? Do we have any differences there?
Yeah, we tend to find that males are a little bit higher in their prevalence rates of smoking, along with smoking rates generally decrease as you increase with age, education, and income.
Mm, okay, so there we do have a link to what I talked to the earlier caller about, Brad. So it is a link to a socioeconomic status.
Yeah, we are tending to find that our highest proportion of smokers is less than $15,000 of annual income. So we are seeing that link with income.
Okay, so if I would say the most likely person to smoke in Iowa is what age, what we see earning a lower income, a male, anything else we can say about that person likely to smoke statistically?
Usually the lesser amount of education, the more mm-hmm. prevalent they are to be smoking.
Okay, Jen Schulte, stay with us. I'm Iowa Director of the Government Relations at the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. Let's also add to our conversation. Before I do that, I want to reach out to our listeners. As you heard in the first part of the program, we want to hear your story of smoking and quitting this hour, or trying to quit. Perhaps you're currently trying to quit. What have you found helps or hurts in kicking the habit? 1-866-780-9100 is our toll-free number, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org, our email. You can find us on Facebook and leave a message or a question there. Also, find us on Twitter. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Already an email from Pam in Woolstock. Pam writes, I've quit twice, once for 10 years after hypnosis. The last time I quit was after reading Alan Carr's book, Alan Carr's Easy Way to Stop Smoking. Throughout the book, she writes, he tells us that stopping equals freedom. By the time you finish the book, you realize you really don't need to smoke, that it's a habit, can be easily broken. And she writes, when I was done reading, I had lost the urge to smoke without any withdrawal symptoms. Carr was right, she writes. I didn't feel like I had given up anything. I just felt free. Thank you for that email, Pam in Woolstock. And she says, Alan Carr's book, Easy Way to Stop Smoking, was a godsend to her, I guess you could say. And let's talk to Matt Gannon, rather, Assistant Attorney General in the Tobacco Division of the Iowa Attorney General's Office. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Ben.
I wonder if you can give us this perspective. We heard a little bit about the demographics of smoking in the last 50 years. Can you give us an idea of how tobacco laws have progressed over the course of five decades or whatever section you choose to raise awareness, to restrict the marketing of, and I suppose to tax as well, huh?
Sure. All of those things have changed in 50 years, and really there's been a tremendous amount of change just in the last 15 years. If you go back to 1998, the 46 states and several territories entered into the Master Settlement Agreement with the major tobacco companies, which changed the marketing and targeting of youth dramatically by those companies. That was really, I think, the start of the modern.
Mm-hmm. And what was the crux of that 98 agreement, the outcome there, the result of it? What did it change?
The crux was that individual states had begun suing the major tobacco companies for a number of claims related to the marketing and health effects of their products on states who had to absorb a lot of those costs through Medicaid health expenditures and otherwise. The result of the settlement was really targeted at youth marketing, and tobacco companies were no longer allowed to target youth in their advertising. They were no longer allowed to use cartoon images in their advertising. They could not use outdoor advertising, primarily billboards or on the sides of city buses, for example. And they couldn't use their brand names to sponsor athletic events or concerts.
Mm-hmm. Do we know how effective that 98 agreement was or has been?
Well, in changing the behavior of the tobacco companies and their marketing, I think it has been effective. And, you know, as the smoking rates have declined, you have to credit that agreement with having an impact on those rates. There are certainly other...
Quickly, Jen Schulte at the American Cancer Society, do you agree with that, that had a good impact on, positive impact on the rate at which youth smoke?
Yeah, I absolutely do. And I also have, I've been looking at the comparative data to the other states too. So when you're ready to come back to that, we can as well.
Okay. Let me go to Matt, first of all, and talk about what is news on the cigarette front. E-cigarettes, these are these battery-operated products that heat a liquid nicotine, nicotine that's derived from tobacco plants, and it's heated into a vapor that the user inhales. And I understand that Iowa Attorney General Tom Miller, I think late last year, wanted the Iowa legislature to ban electronic cigarette sales to minors. Lately, you've really been the point person at the Attorney General's office, I understand, Matt Gannon, for concerns about e-cigarettes. Why ban minors? What do we have as far as science that backs up the fact that we should put a ban in place?
Well, the science, in many respects, these products are too new to know what the science is, both good and bad. I believe the consensus really is around the state, and you talk to retailers who sell these things, and they all tell you, we don't sell them to minors. The manufacturers all say they're intended for adult use. What this is really an affirmation that the policy is that these are adult products to be used by adults, if at all. And the concern is that e-cigarettes, they're a new product. They have flavorings that are often associated with youth, that appeal to youth, bubble gum, other candy flavors. And the idea is to, before they become a gateway to other combustible cigarette use, to prevent youth from being able to purchase these. Because right now in the state, anybody of any age can walk into a store and purchase an e-cigarette.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But there's still, you will admit, there's still science has to weigh in on this, and a large portion of what you're saying to provide backing for it.
I think to understand whether there are what the negative health impacts are of e-cigarettes, there's not enough science yet, I think, to understand what the potential good an e-cigarette could do in helping someone quit smoking is yet to be understood.
Let's, on that point, bring in Dr. Carl Thomas, Executive Vice Chair for Clinical Programs, also Clinical Professor of Internal Medicine at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. Dr. Thomas, welcome to our program.
Pleasure to be here.
You've been listening to our conversation thus far. Now we have your medical expertise. Let's have you chip in what you have to say about e-cigarettes. And Matt Gannon there talking about the legal aspects from the Attorney General's office. What do we know about e-cigarettes as far as their health effects? And we can address them as perhaps a cessation tool as well in a moment.
Sure. So one of the things about e-cigarettes is that there's a lot of different companies out there producing a lot of different products. And because this is a relatively new commercial product, there haven't been really any consistent standards between manufacturers. So what might be true for one e-cigarette might not be true for the next. And so the variability in what is actually in them in terms of the flavoring, the bystander chemicals, and for that matter, even the amount of nicotine in one cigarette to the next is very hard to know because we don't have any significant regulatory control or standardization of the dose or the construction of those products.
But really, when we're talking about e-cigarettes, I have a very fundamental understanding of them, but it's simply nicotine that is vaporized through this mechanism. So we get rid of all the other awful things that are in tobacco, pure tobacco, the tar,
don't we? So we're really only have to be concerned about the health effects of nicotine. Is that right, Dr. Thomas?
No, I don't think that's true. I think that there are other chemicals in the vaporizer chamber that are heated and then inhaled, and those include the flavorants, but there's likely other chemicals like preservatives in there as well. And so because the manufacturers have not been required to disclose everything that's in them and they're not tightly regulated, we can speculate that some of the inhaled vapor is pure nicotine, but it's really hard to know what all the other things that go in there are. And the bottom line is that these are inhaled things. So whatever is in there is clearly getting into your body when you take your breath
okay,
in.
Okay, so you say give science a little time to weigh in on this and then standardize if we were going to have a product like this.
Yes.
Okay. Before the break, we have a break in a couple minutes. Let's get to a caller or two. Mary in Iowa City. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Go ahead. We're coming up on a break. What's your perspective?
Well, I've been trying to quit for several years, and I've tried e-cigarettes the last few times, and they don't seem to work for me because I feel like addiction is more about – it's not just about the nicotine in your body, but it's about getting past behaviors and habits. And the e-cigarette is just so close to smoking but not quite there. And so it's always left me feeling like I really am missing cigarettes more so than if I were to just go cold turkey.
It doesn't scratch the itch.
Right, exactly.
Do you see it having any role just from your personal perspective in ceasing smoking?
I think in terms of, the last time I quit for like 7 days and then I really wanted a cigarette and I told myself I'm not going to buy a cigarette, I'll buy an e-cigarette. And that did get me like past, you know, some really bad cravings, but, you know, I did end up relapsing recently after that. So I don't know. I guess it depends.
Okay, thank you very much. Mary
thank
from
you.
Iowa City, we're looking for your smoking story, smoking and quitting or trying to quit, 1-866-780-9100. Go to our Facebook page as an alternative, as Adam did. Adam says, I know doctors don't want to recommend it, but for me what helped most was e-cigarettes. Why is the medical industry so wary of them? Is it just because we don't know all that much yet? That's exactly your point, isn't it, Dr. Thomas?
Yes. I think compared to the other things that we usually talk about for smoking cessation, like Nicorette gum or nicotine patches or even some of the other drugs and medications we use, we know what the doses are. We know what the efficacy is. We know when they work. And we have a lot more familiarity and comfort with those simply because they're known quantities.
So, okay. We have to take a short break. Matt Gannon, before we do, what is the likelihood of having a ban on e-cigarettes for minors in the near future?
Well, we'll need the legislature to act, and they just came back this week, and I'm hopeful that—
Have you been monitoring things at the legislature? Do you think there's your office is aware of anything going on there?
There's definitely interest in doing something on— The sale to minors, and I'm hopeful. You never know till the bill is passed, but I'm hopeful.
Matt Gannon of the Iowa Attorney General's Office, Dr. Carl Thomas with us as well, and Jen Schulte. And we enjoy having your story of smoking or quitting, 1-866-780-9100. We'll be back in just a moment as we mark 50 years since the landmark U.S. Surgeon General's report linking cigarette smoking and lung cancer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
Huff, 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 and if you smoke yourself to death, tell St. Peter at the Golden Gate, you hates to make him wait, you've got to have another cigarette.
Back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer, and we're remembering the landmark U.S. Surgeon General's report linking cigarette smoking and lung cancer, released 50 years ago in 1964 by checking the status of smoking in Iowa, in the Midwest, in the country, and having you share your stories of smoking and quitting or trying to quit. And also talking with some experts here in Iowa, Jen Schulte, Iowa Director of Government Relations at the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network, Matt Gannon, Assistant Attorney General in the Tobacco Division of the Iowa Attorney General's Office, and Dr. Carl Thomas, Executive Vice Chair for Clinical Programs,
also clinical professor of internal medicine at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, looking for your stories of smoking, trying to quit. And Matt, Jen, and Dr. Thomas, let's go right to the phones. We have an outpouring of people want to tell us how they stopped or tried to stop. Pat, you are calling from Nevada, Iowa. Welcome to our program.
Yes, hello.
Hi, go ahead. So
hi.
You've been a smoker for how long, or were a smoker?
Well, I smoked for 23 years. I think I associated warmth and comfort with it as my dad would tuck his kids in the bed. He always had tobacco in his overalls, and I think we misaligned that, and it's almost like a stench or a sweetness to warmth and comfort. So for 23 years, I was seeking warmth and comfort, kind of, and not really ever finding it. But ultimately, I thought I would never be able to be by a campfire or a wood-burning cook stove or to drive without a cigarette, without the nicotine. And I started an experiment without really quitting. I just thought, well, if you can't quit, just don't do it. Just grow in a different direction. And that was 24 years ago.
So what do you mean grow in a different direction? What did you do about the campfires and that sense of comfort, your father's tobacco?
Yeah, driving, I probably became addicted to sunflower seeds. I'd watched a cardinal eat a sunflower seed, and I didn't know how they cracked it open and got – so I would do that for miles. So that handled that the dexterity, you know, with your hands and your
– Oh, I get it. Kojak had his lollipop. You have your sunflower seeds.
Yeah, it was a mess, but it wasn't a mess of ashes and butts.
But
through that process, then I was able to, because I'd never quit for more than about 4 days.
So how long has it been since you've smoked a cigarette?
24 years. So that's the reference of time element that I was going. I'd changed a path, if you will.
And it was.
You know, I drive warmth and comfort away from nicotine and cigarettes now.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing your story, Pat, from Nevada.
Yeah, my pleasure. Yeah. And so people can't quit. Just don't do it. And I may have to start again when I'm 80. I wasn't going to make 80 the way I was going, but now I might.
Oh, we sure hope you do, Pat. Thanks for your story.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
Pat in Nevada. Let's go to another caller in a minute. But first, I want to turn to Dr. Thomas. So really, what you said before, this is interesting. This is not just a chemical addiction. We heard about someone's connection to tobacco that the father had when he was tucked in here. So this is a very complicated addiction.
Yeah, I think that one of the key things about the behavior of smoking cigarettes and using tobacco products is that there is a socialization and a very social aspect of it. But there's also some pretty key behaviors that Pat talked a little bit about and Brad talked about earlier on the show, which is that most people who use tobacco products start at a very early age. A lot of them have an experience with multiple times of trying to quit. And they try and they try and they stop and they start again, that sort of thing. But they also have a very social aspect. So with Pat and his father, the comfort and closeness that he felt with his father. But what Brad talked about was having the pressure to smoke again when he was around friends who smoked.
Mm-hmm.
So there are many, many aspects of smoking behavior that make it very complex. And it's really very hard for people to quit. Because it is such a complex behavior.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Dylan. Dylan in Burlington. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing. What do you have to throw in here? You're a smoker or were a smoker?
I was. I was. I started when I was 16 and smoked for a little over 12 years. I've been quit for just over 3 years. I had my 3-year anniversary at the beginning of December.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And yeah, I agree completely. It was my parents smoked, and I hated it growing up, but then as a teenager was around a lot of other kids who smoked, and for some reason I started and became incredibly addicted to it, and at my worst smoked upwards of 2 packs a day. And after several attempts of quitting, I found the and used the patch in those quit attempts, but found that the patch was the best thing for me, at least, because it was such a passive therapy. You don't think about it like when you do gums or inhalers or these e-cigarettes. I feel like those are really active, and you're just reinforcing the addiction response in your brain. And I would just put my patch on in the morning, wear it all day, wear it at night, and just knew that I was getting the nicotine that my body thought it needed.
And then the idea with time, Dr. Thomas, then the idea is to reduce that gradually with patches?
Yes. So there is a clear component of a physiologic addiction. It's a chemical need that your brain and your cells needs. And one way to stop that is to gradually reduce the amount of chemical, in this case nicotine, in your bloodstream.
Mm-hmm. And Dylan, that worked as a textbook case for you?
Yeah. It literally just every time I would step down in patch strength, I knew that I was getting less addicted. I would have less cravings and just felt myself getting better mentally and physically as I used the patch. And then I also found I had to keep my hands busy because I drove around a lot for work.
Okay.
And I would find things to do with my hands, like I'd taught myself tricks with pins and coins to spin around and
yep.
and whatnot, keep my hands busy so that I would find myself in my car, even, you know, when I was quit, reaching for where I kept my cigarettes or my lighter unconsciously.
Isn't that funny? Well, maybe you want to pick up a bag of sunflower seeds, too. We heard that might be effective.
I'm sure works for some people, not me, though.
Dylan, thanks for calling from Burlington.
Thank you.
Let's go to Katie in Des Moines. Hi, Katie. You're a smoker? You were a smoker?
I was a smoker for 20-something years. And then one day I just stopped, and then like almost exactly a year later, I got upset. And I drove to the store, got a pack of cigarettes, started smoking again like I had never quit.
Oh, so there's something in your life that just you were strong until you hit a moment that something surprised you.
It
was a bad.
It was like what's the point? You know. So
I got to have some comfort here.
Yeah. And then not too long after that, though, I had heard something on the radio about calcium tricking your brain into not knowing that it's depleting itself of nicotine, and that if you were trying to quit smoking, that could possibly help. So instead of just doing the calcium, I made a ritual out of it, because back then, if the phone rang, it was attached to the wall, so you would get your ashtray, your pack of cigarettes, your cup of coffee, you would go sit down and enjoy your conversation. So I put my calcium in a place that when I felt I needed a cigarette, I would go to that place, take one out, go get a drink of water, you know, and take my calcium as though I made a ritual out of I'm getting a cigarette. I'm going to go sit down for a minute.
Wow. Interesting.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. So I think mine might have been more physiological maybe, or physical, like hand to mouth, you know, but I stopped and I have not smoked for like 33 years.
Katie, thank you for sharing your story, and congratulations on not smoking for three decades.
Okay, thank you.
Katie in Des Moines, 1-866-780-9100, talking with smokers and former smokers as we look back 50 years at the release of a landmark U.S. Surgeon General's report linking cigarette smoking and lung cancer. Here's an email from Janet. I was a heavy cigarette smoker for over 30 years. Quit 18 years ago. Quitting was the hardest thing I've ever done. She writes, I made over a dozen attempts. What worked for me, besides maybe finally just being ready, was a combination of nicotine patches, a weekly support group, and a prescription pill at the time called Zyban. Is that right, doctor?
Yes, that's one of those.
Zyban. And then Janet says, life without cigarettes is amazing. Today I can take the stairs, ride my bike, go for a hike in the mountains, all without gasping for breath. Being cigarette-free has literally changed my life. I hope anyone who may be trying to quit will be successful. I encourage you not to give up. One day you will make it. So what we're seeing here, Jen Schulte, if I can go back to you, is often multiple attempts, which I suppose like dieting has to often be so discouraging when you fall back into the habit. Jen.
Yeah, I think what we have seen or heard from our viewers today is how difficult it is to quit. And that's why from the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network's perspective, we continue to go back to the things that we know helps individuals reduce tobacco consumption, and is why we work with the Department of Public Health and the Tobacco Division to adequately fund those programs so Iowans can access the Department of Public Health and the things that they do within the community to utilize their services.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the Affordable Care Act and as it relates to this topic. Dr. Thomas, the U.S. government is recommending at-risk smokers receive annual lung cancer screenings as part of the Affordable Care Act. How will that work?
That's a great question. So what people would need to know is that the United States Preventive Services Task Force got together and over the past couple of years has been looking at the science behind lung cancer and preventing lung cancer. And the general starting belief is that if you can find cancer at an early stage, when it's not very big and hasn't spread anywhere, it can actually be cured. So
lung cancer as well.
Yes, lung cancer as well. And we've seen this sort of success with things like breast cancer and colon cancer screening. And so the question has always been, well, why not lung cancer? A couple of big things changed which do make it possible now, which is that we can detect lung cancer at a really early stage when it's really small and can still be cured.
Through what technology?
By doing a CAT scan of the chest. And the recommendations for lung cancer screening now are for people who are at particularly high risk, so folks who've been smoking for a bit, to come in and get a CT scan of their chest to look for early lung cancers.
Mm-hmm. And will this be paid for by the Affordable Care Act, or do you have to kick something in here?
Right now, we're waiting to see exactly what happens with how that funding is going to be released. But because it is a recommendation from the Preventive Services Task Force, it will be covered.
Mm-hmm. With a CAT scan, there is a bit of a risk in the test itself, is there not?
Sure. Of course there is, because the CAT scan is actually a form of X-rays. And so if you have many, many X-rays over time, you'll have some radiation exposure. And so that's why the recommendations for lung cancer screening are not to start at a very early age, but rather to start at age 55. And we're using something called a low-dose CT scanner so that the dose of the CAT scan itself is about the same as a dose for a mammogram, for example.
Mm-hmm. Jen Schulte, what's your view from the American Cancer Society on this recommendation?
We are always supportive of prevention and look forward to encouraging Iowans to invest in getting the lung cancer screenings as is under the Affordable Care Act.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to another caller. Caller from Seattle, is it Dottie?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Dottie. You're calling from Seattle, but you have an Iowa connection. What is it?
I'm actually one of the Iowa Quitline Quit Coaches. We implement the Quitline Iowa program, and we help people quit.
Mm-hmm. Tell us what the Quit Line is for those who are not familiar with it.
The Quit Line is a free program that you can call in and speak with a coach and create a plan. Having a plan will help you be more successful.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine what we're hearing today in the short time that we've been talking about it is that plans have to necessarily be very individual. How do you decide a plan for someone that is tailored for them and has the greatest likelihood of success?
We know there are five keys to success. You need to have a good quit date, a method that works for that particular person. We also work with each individual of how to control their own urges, encourage them to get support, and also get rid of their cigarettes, and to have personal reasons for wanting to quit. Really can't quit for anybody else.
Mm-hmm. So personal reasons. So you can't do it for your spouse or for your kids. Really?
Doesn't work long term.
No? Oh, you can short term, but long term, you have to do it for yourself.
Most of the time, people are more successful when they quit for their own personal reasons.
Okay. Very good. Dottie, thank you for calling from Seattle.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Well, I'm sorry, Donnie, cut off your thank you, but we're glad to have you on. Peter in Iowa City. Hi, Peter.
Hi. My story is secondhand, but I've always found it interesting. I knew a writer who often comes to the local science fiction convention. During the Vietnam War, he picked up a heroin habit, which was easy to get in the Southeast Theater there. But he said so at one time, he both mainlined heroin and he smoked two packs a day, and he says that of the two, it was much harder to quit the smoking.
Really? Dr. Thomas, can you follow that? Is there any medical
research to back that up?
It turns out that very early medical research that looked at behaviors in mice, they basically had mice press a little lever to get heroin or morphine or nicotine, and they tried to track, you know, what would the mice do the most. And it turns out that the behavior that the mice had was much greater for nicotine addiction than it was for any of the other drugs of abuse. So weight for weight, milligram for milligram, nicotine is likely to be much more addictive than even the hardcore street drugs.
Okay, Bob, let's go to another caller. Thank you, Peter, in Iowa City. Let's go to Mark in Dubuque. Hi, Mark.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, sir.
Yes, I used to smoke those things too. I got a trick. My father-in-law was a lifetime smoker, and he came up with a plan that worked for him, and so I use it on myself, and it worked just fine. I carried a single cigarette in a pack in my pocket all the time, everywhere. Like, you know, I'd always had a pack of cigarettes in my pocket. I just kept one there, just kept one there. And I know, man, I got one. If I really need one, I got one. But for right now, I'm going to go without it.
Yeah.
And I just kept talking to myself that way, and it worked. After about a month, I threw the darn thing away.
Yeah, you probably got pretty tattered after a while, didn't
you? Yeah, it's willpower, but, you know, you can do it. People have done harder things.
Mark, well, congratulations, and thank you for sharing that little trick that you
played. You know, for listeners, try it. I mean, it'll work. You still got to have willpower, but it's an easy way to do it. Thanks, okay?
All right, Mark in Dubuque, thank you for joining us. Let's end with our guest by going around and casting an eye to the future. Matt Gannon of the Iowa Attorney General's Office, what do you see in the future for regulating tobacco or education, all the things that the Attorney General's Office may be involved with? What's on the horizon? We've got this e-cigarette thing to figure out, right?
Well, yes. excuse me. The e-cigarette thing is an immediate issue that I think will be addressed now and will be addressing for some time because, you know, Dr. Thomas made an excellent point about the need to regulate the product itself because we don't know enough about what it is. And the analogy I always use with people when they sort of give me a skeptical eye about that is I said, well, you don't want lead paint in the toys that your children have. And it's the same kind of analysis that has to be done with this product to make sure that if you are using it, it's safe or safe enough for you.
So, Jen Schulte, let me go to you. What is if we're at 18%, more or less the national average for smoking in the U.S. here in Iowa, what is the goal from the American Cancer Society?
You know, we continue to go back and look at the three things that are proven effective in reducing tobacco rates, and that is, again, adequately funding the state's prevention and cessation program, implementing comprehensive Smoke-Free Air Act laws, and frequently increasing tobacco tax. So across the country, my colleagues in other states continue to look at where they have weaknesses in those areas and try to strengthen those to help reduce the rates of tobacco use. Mm-hmm.
Earlier, I surprised you with the statistics about other parts of the state. Did you find in the meantime where in the country most of the smokers are?
You know, it's a little dispersed. It tends to be down south, but West Virginia and Arkansas are the two highest prevalence rate states. West Virginia is at about 28%. Utah and California come in at the lowest.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Dr. Carl Thomas, we have about a minute left. Let me ask you, where are we going with this? How far can we get down these rates of smoking? And I assume that's a good goal. I mean, we want to have freedom in this country, but we also want to not have people addicted to very harmful substances.
Yeah, I think you're right. We absolutely do have to recognize people have freedom of choice, and they do have the freedom to choose whether or not to smoke. But I think one of our goals needs to be to reduce the burden of disease that goes along with that freedom. So cigarettes are directly related to strokes and heart attacks and emphysema and lung cancer. And those are the four leading causes of death in the United States right now. So we must balance to our tobacco policies, our use of cigarettes, our regulation of cigarettes to both get those health goals but also to respect people's freedom of choice and, mm-hmm. and their ability to make decisions for themselves. So where I'd like to see us go is get a better balance on that and reduce the disease burden.
Okay, Dr. Carl Thomas, Executive Vice Chair for Clinical Programs, Clinical Professor of Internal Medicine at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. Dr. Thomas, thank you for joining us today, coming into the studio. Matt Gannon, thanks to you as well, Assistant Attorney General in the Tobacco Division of the Iowa Attorney General's Office. Matt, we appreciate it.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Jen Schulte, Iowa Director of Government Relations at the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. Thanks to you as well.
Thank you.
And I want to remind you, tomorrow on this program, it's a News Buzz edition on Friday. One of the things we'll be looking at is how many spiral arms does our galaxy have, the Milky Way? No, it's not a pub trivia question. It's actually a matter of debate among scientists. And we'll talk to a professor of physics at Wartburg College, Charles Figura, about why it matters and what the debate is all about tomorrow on this program, a News Buzz edition of our program. The River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Ben Kiefer. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. Thanks for joining us.